Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
It's still going to be called Canucks Central, at least this week. That's what we're calling it right now. We won't speak entirely about the Vancouver Canucks. Maybe it'll be used to be Sports Central next week. I don't know what we're going to call it, Bick. But for us, it's an opportunity to talk about some of the recent developments in the National Hockey League. You'll hear from Gary Bettman this segment as well. For those of you who did not hear him last hour, we played his entire interview. He was on the Fan 590, and he addressed many of the questions that a lot of us in the sports world have right now. And I thought he did a fine. He's done a fine job of handling public questions for a very long time. Not surprised he handled the interview well, and it gave it further context, at least for me, that Brian Burke was one of the guys asking questions because he has intimate knowledge of how that office works.
One thing you'd say, okay, about Gary Bettman is, in times of crises, can he be a face of a sports league? And look, I know we all have opinions about him himself, but there aren't a lot of guys that are better equipped to deal with this.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, and I would throw that out to our listeners right now. Subway text line 650-650, and I want you to add to your thought in a second, but it's a good point you raise, and one we should throw out to our listeners. Look, whether you're one of those who, you see Bettman and you have a visceral reaction or not.
And you're going to boo just because it's part of your fan rite of passage.
A couple of things. One, how has your opinion of Gary Bettman changed over the course of his tenure? And number two, when you are talking about the leader of an organization, because, listen, across the board right now, this is a time for leadership. When things go bad, that's when real leadership shows up. How do you view Gary Bettman as a leader of the league that you love? Do you view him as a strong leader? Even though you don't agree with everything he says, do you view him as a guy, you know what? This guy will exhibit strong leadership. He'll do the right thing. Or do you not have that opinion? Hit us up, 650-650. It's the Subway text line.
And more so than anything, it's, you know, one of the hallmarks of leadership to me are, do you have the trust of those who you're responsible for, right? So 31 owners, I think unanimously they would say, yeah, we trust what Gary Bettman is going to do.
The cynic says that's just because he's made the money. That's what the cynic says to that statement.
However, the manner in which he has applied himself over the course of his tenure would also indicate that when other tough times have come, can you steer the ship? And so I think he's got the trust of those people, and how does that filter down through everyone else, right? Again, in relation to this particular moment, if it was a work stoppage, whatever it was, opinions may vary. But for what this moment is, as we all deal with COVID-19 and all this, you have to be unified. And one thing this is going to show is that he can help unify.
Well, and from what I heard of the conference call the other day, from what I heard, owners in unison listened to Gary Bettman's message, and there was no rebuttal, which I think says something.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it speaks to the unification you're talking about. I think that's a very good point that you're making right now. Everybody has a different definition of leadership, and we saw that come out earlier this year when Bo Horvat was going to be awarded the captaincy, and people had different opinions on that, and we talked about leadership and how it manifests itself. To me, the hallmark of great leadership is when you have adverse situations, and this is most certainly one for our society, not just for the National Hockey League, but when you come under adversity, can your leader make the right decision, not the popular decision? Sometimes they are one and the same, and it's great if that transpires. But I want someone who is willing to make the right decision, not the popular decision. Does Gary Bettman pass that litmus test?
Well, just go through the history. I think that's would bear out quite significantly. And that's a great point, because if you think about it, think on a smaller scale, right? We talk so much about the day-to-day stuff, you know, when it comes to the Canucks with the league and what contracts do you give out and who do you sign, all that. And it's important not to confuse what the majority says with what's right. And because if you went to entry-level employees or lower-level employees, middle management, and you ask them, okay, what would you want? What would the response be? Raises for everyone, 3 more weeks of vacation, all of this. And look, that's great. It pleases the working staff.
We all remember the high school election where the one guy or girl got up there and said, I will extend recess and I will put more pop machines in the school. And that's not leadership.
I did that, actually. I won, too.
Of course.
Exactly did that.
Good for you. Great platform, Bick.
It didn't work at all. But here's the thing. It's the tough decisions fall on the minority, not the majority. And it's tough for CEOs to not go, I would love to give raises for everyone, but then we won't have jobs shortly thereafter. And so, yes, that's tough to compute, but it's the reality. And here's a guy who's going to be tasked with guiding everybody and making tough decisions to get through this.
First answer to our question comes through from Ray in Campbell River, who says, good job, Gary. He feels that he's doing a good job as the leader of the National Hockey League. As mentioned, he was on Fan 590 today, extended interview on Hockey Central. One of the questions that I have right now that everybody has and that Brian Burke asked him was the point of no return. Mm-hmm. Where is that? Where you cannot feasibly go ahead with the playoffs, even if it's truncated, let alone a regular season. Here's what Bettman had to say.
Well, you were with me enough to know. So we have an internal task force that has been meeting, two times a day in the morning and the afternoon, and we are exploring every contingency. We're looking out in the calendar to see, what's the latest, the last day we could be playing under other scenario, and then backing it up. And what are our options in the time frame that's available? And we're doing all sorts of modeling, whether it's completing the existing regular season as is and then a full playoffs, or whether or not, based on time constraints, we're going to have to make adjustments and do something different, novel, creative. And we're constantly reanalyzing and reworking that. So that's something that, it's like a puzzle, right? And you've got to fit the pieces together. Although the interesting part of this puzzle is you don't know exactly what it's going to look like when you're done. But our responsibility to our players, our teams, most importantly, our fans, is to make sure we're doing everything right and making sure, that when we come back, and I believe we will at some point because I'm an optimist, it'll be when it's appropriate and when it's safe so that everybody can be comfortable.
And he made it very clear that will be dictated by someone outside of the NHL. It's not the NHL deciding, things are good now. No, health officials, governments, they are going to play a large role in when the NHL, the NBA, they'll be told when it's safe to return.
Right.
And that's where they'll take their cues from. And that's the right answer. And it's the right way to approach all of this. And good on Bettman for saying it during the interview. I would expect nothing less. What he describes there is a very complex puzzle because as they form these contingency plans, they don't have to look at it just from this season's standpoint. They have to look at it next season as well. So part of it is, okay, here's the best case scenario.
Yeah,
this is a very short layoff, and we can put some regular season games together. What's a reasonable number, guys, so we can get everybody to the same level? And then we look at playoffs that maybe a couple of the rounds are shortened, but here's where we go in the best case scenario. And then there's the next case scenario, and then there's the scenario after that. And then we eventually work our way down to, Bick, the point of no return, as I have called it, where you say, look, we cannot feasibly put a product that has both integrity on the ice and one that doesn't completely impact next season to the degree that we can't live with. I think we can all envision a scenario where, okay, this gets back, there's a truncated playoffs, and all of a sudden, yes, you're impacting next season, but not to the extent that you're going to completely compromise it. Maybe the next season has fewer games, or maybe it's 82, but it's compressed the way it would be in an Olympic year, and maybe it starts in November.
That bye week no longer exists kind of thing.
But there's also going to be a point in the calendar where it comes and goes, guys, we can't have this so that we have 4 rounds of best of threes and we determine a Stanley Cup champion, because then we're completely compromising the integrity of the product. Like, we can't get to that point. We don't do it just for the sake of awarding a Stanley Cup, because if we lose a certain degree of integrity, it doesn't mean what it's supposed to mean.
I don't know. It feels like it's more important to the league to actually hand out the Stanley Cup. And I posed this on Twitter yesterday that, okay, let's say a scenario develops where we're not playing 82 games and we're also not having full seven-game series, right? And the Canucks won a Stanley Cup in this virus-altered season. Would you care if it was had an asterisk on it? And overwhelming, it was no. And I think fan bases themselves...
Okay, what does an asterisk look like to you?
No, look, we're not having a seven-game series, right? So it suddenly looks different.
But there's precedent for that. There's precedent for a Stanley Cup that is played without seven-game series the whole way.
Look, I agree with you. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think you can find different ways to hand out the Stanley Cup.
Sure, you can play March Madness-style bracket if you want, but again, I think that compromises the integrity of the NHL playoffs, I don't agree that people would have that pass the eye test the way that diminished series, not seven games, but five games, maybe early it's three games. There's a point where it has to be what this tournament embodies.
But the priority, just based on what you hear so far, it feels like the priority is to award a Stanley Cup this year.
Okay, so I'll play that out this way. Would it be okay if they said, guys, we don't have time for playoffs, we're going to hand the Boston Bruins the Stanley Cup?
Well, I'm probably the worst person to ask for that, because I'm pro, like, having just a 100-game season and there you go. But
you know what the general hockey fan would say. They'd say, no, you can't do that without the playoffs. And I do think there's a point where even people who want the cup handed out and want their team to have a chance would say, if it doesn't pass the smell test, I'm sorry. No, don't do it.
In that scenario, look, these are all stacked scenarios, right? Would I prefer playoffs? Yes. I would prefer not handing out a cup based on the regular season play in relation to just canceling the rest of the season. Like, that to me is the worst option available, because it's not, it's not really set in precedent to say, oh, we'll just give it to these guys.
Nope, it's not.
So I would rather just cancel the playoffs if we get to that stage in on its own. However, what's interesting about, just going through all the possible scenarios, and the way that puzzle works too, like, this is as complex as putting the schedule together for the 82-game season. And it's going to be a challenging aspect for the schedule makers of the NHL, because that process in alone takes months to get the 82-game schedule set. And how they're going about this is going to be fascinating when it comes out. And if there's a result that comes in the short term that says, okay, we are playing 74 games, 76 games, whatever it is, if they still feel like they can do this.
It absolutely is. And I guess my point is, despite what the poll results may have indicated yesterday, I do think for most hockey fans, there is willingness to compromise, but only to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, who cares, as long as the Stanley Cup's handed out, we're good with that. There has to be a certain level of integrity that people are willing to be flexible with in extreme circumstances like this one is. For example, the 48-game season, and we've seen it a couple of times with the NHL. There's no asterisk to me beside the Chicago Blackhawks. It's different, but especially because the playoff format was kept intact, people were okay with it.
You're not compromising the playoff format. And 48 games, do we get the 16 best teams to be determined? But they all played 48, right? And
part of the reason I would argue it is that we have seen a reticence for a lot of hockey fans. There are some who want to see it, but we've seen a reticence for a lot of hockey fans to even move to a different overtime format in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the playoffs. I'm okay within the regular season, but I'm not sure I want to go there. I think a lot of people are on board just because we want to see more 3-on-3 and we want to see the highest, most highly skilled players. But for a lot of people, that compromises the integrity of what the tournament is supposed to be about.
Yeah, and that's the purity of the sport to some degree, of why change something that's working. It's supposed to be hard. And We were kind of talking about this on the program, is if you could change one thing, what would you change? And Walks and I were talking about just have ties again. Like, that's not that big of a deal in the NHL. And yes, you can have your 3-on-3, but you can go back to something like ties. It's fine. And that goes back to the purity of what it used to be as well. And overtime, still in the playoffs, still feels the same of, well, it's supposed to be hard to earn. It's the toughest championship to win in sports. So why make it gimmicky there? You should have to go through 5-on-5 OT. So, yeah, if you want to make changes, it's going to be tough. But you're right. We all understand the situation that we're in, that a change is likely coming.
This one comes in. First off, Bettman did the right thing. He did his due diligence. Always has done what is best for the league. Yes, no hockey sucks, but this is live, not just sport. When hockey's back, it will probably be the most exciting hockey that we'll possibly see, depending on how the league figures out what will be the best option to play and what's left of the season and the playoffs. Bettman for president. I'm not sure
everyone
is looking for that, but that's how the text is signed today. We do have some questions coming in. Alex Auld's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We will address these. I've said we will try to address any questions you have, whether it is just everyday living questions or NHL questions, speculative questions. This from Bryson Powell River, who has two questions. Number one, has Aquilini made a statement on if he is going to pay the wages of the workers in Rogers Arena yet? To the best of my knowledge, no. I have not seen anything come down. I have not seen any reports. I'm not sure anyone has been able to ask that question and get an answer on it from Francesco Aquilini and the Aquilini family. So to the best of my knowledge, I don't have that answer.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen anything just yet.
And the reason it's being asked is because we have seen this in a variety of places. The Ducks and the Devils are the latest to say, we're doing what Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks are doing. We're going to figure out a way to compensate our workers, our part-time workers, during this time. We'll figure out a way. Winnipeg said no. At least as of yesterday, Mark Chipman had said, look, these are part-time workers. They, like us, rely on these games, which we actually think are still going to get played. So right now, much like we're not refunding all of your tickets.
Right.
We might get to that point, but right now we're not going to commit to that. We expect that those games are going to be played, and then those part-time employees will get their part-time salaries at that time. It'll just be delayed.
The thing is, so many people rely paycheck to paycheck,
of
right?
Of course they do. But that was his answer. Yeah. He was castigated for it, and the Jets have come under fire for that answer. Not every owner has been asked, and not every owner is available to answer these questions. But to your question, Bryce, I have not seen anything yet. Bryce also said, also, if the season is canceled, do you have an idea what would happen to conditional draft picks that depend on playoff status? No, I do not. And that is one of the fascinating questions that's being asked right now. You know, I do a show 2 hours a day that's both here and in Calgary. So one of the questions in Calgary has always been about James Neal's goal total. If anybody doesn't know the condition of that trade with Milan Lucic and James Neal, it looked like he'd hit that goal total no problem. If James Neal scores more than 20 goals, so he's got to hit 21, Calgary gets a third-round draft pick back. Well, if the season's done now, and I believe Neal's sitting on, what, 18?
He's got 19.
19 now, so he needs two more goals. Mm-hmm. If they play a handful more games, there's a shot James Neal gets that, even though he's not playing with Connor McDavid anymore. If they shut her down, well, Calgary, sorry, you don't get that draft pick.
Massive. And look, those conditions
just one example.
Exist all across the league. And conditional picks have become kind of all the rage recently. I wish we had an answer how that plays out. But you think about the steps they go in order to figure what they're dealing with here. Right now, it's okay. Do we still have a season? This issue will come up at some point. It's just way down the list right now. It's way down the list of all the things the NHL has to figure out.
Certainly it is. And one of the things way down the list, but again, they can use the time for. I brought this up with JP Barry earlier, and he said, yeah, I think that eventually that's something that will happen. It's not there yet. I saw this floated yesterday, and yeah, I think they'll get to this at some point if we have a lengthy stoppage, mm-hmm. which a lot of us are predicting, a lengthy pause, to use the NHL's term. Do they start to hammer out some CBA issues? Does the PA get together with the NHL, even though it's via video conferencing, and they say, okay, here are some of the hurdles we've had so far. Since we figured out all of our contingency plans, let's work on this now so that when we do get back, we might have some pretty good news to announce.
Can you be proactive in this? And honestly, like it was a fair question to even ask here locally when the Jacob Markstrom injury happened. Yes, he's going to recover, but was that an opportunity to, you know, try to hammer out something when you're just waiting, basically, between Jim Benning and the Jacob Markstrom camp? Same situation exists here. We're all just waiting. And I don't know if this is going to be a priority because think of all the things the NHL is dealing with. Actually, both sides, really. internally of having to make sure that players are still training, having to make sure the players are staying safe. Well, and then from the league side, you know, having the consistent messaging going out to the public, figuring out what to do with 31 arenas, all of this plays into fact of are they meeting and taking time to meet on something that's down the road. I imagine that might surface at some point, but again, it goes to what the priority is right now. They're trying to get a grasp of the sport in itself of when can they resume, more so than talking about CBA talks.
JP Barry was very clear on that point. Yes, it is a major discussion point for agents and clients right now about trying to figure out what it looks like if players are going to have to keep themselves in shape, and at what point can they get together and try to replicate practice if that's what they're doing. When's it safe to do so? When does it make sense physically to do so? Jacob Markstrom, that is another question we're going to be talking about over the course of this stoppage. How does that affect contract negotiations when you don't know how he's coming back off that injury? How does he view it for his pending free agency as well? The one thing that JP Barry made very clear that was a simple fix, I thought it would be, but I felt compelled to ask because I've had the question numerous times over the last couple of days. What does this mean for RFAs, UFAs, July 1st wise? And he said, that's a pretty easy fix. We'll be able to just push the date back.
Yeah.
If we are able to play this season, we'll push the date back. That's not something that's going to need a vote for the this will be pretty easy business. So if there is a schedule agreed upon and they're able to have a playoff season, don't worry. Jacob Markstrom doesn't become a UFA in the middle of a second round series, for example. Like, that doesn't happen. He's not a UFA, and
I'm going to sign on the dotted line, and then I'll play game four.
July 1st can just be changed to August 1st, for example, if that's what it ends up being.
And we talked about that yesterday, and I thought that would be an easy way to push the date back. It's, and would there be revolting players of like, oh, no, I want to get out of my contract as quick as possible because I play in Florida, because I play in wherever. And I'm just like, I think they would just get suspended. Again, like, this is all speculative. But if you didn't want to push it back, I guess it would be a PA thing, right? They'd have to do it all together.
This one comes in from Matt in Abbey. Have you heard anything about darts or bowling? Who do you think you are? I am, is the quote that he throws in there as well. I have not heard anything about bowling.
Darts, you'd have to assume is...
Well, at last I heard, there was a relatively large darts competition that was scheduled to go in England this weekend. Now, I am not at the tip, if you will, of the darts conversation. Chris Wall would be our expert on
that.
True. We'll have to call him. England in the last couple of days needs to rethink the way that it goes about sending out its info. I mean, everything that went down with the Premier League yesterday, if it wasn't so serious, it would be comical. Like, in some ways, it was comical.
Yeah.
We are going ahead as scheduled. Oh, Arsenal manager test positive. Oh, player test positive. Actually, we're not going to play this weekend. I know we just released a statement a couple of hours ago, but we're actually not going
to
play now.
Came to their senses, much like every other sports league in the world did. And look, I just, the Masters canceled today. I just can't imagine we're going to wake up and any events like bowling or darts are going to continue.
Well, last I checked, and again, this may have changed during the course of the morning, and if I have the incorrect information, I'm happy to correct that on the other side. But last I checked, NASCAR was going this weekend. Like, they were running that event in front of empty stands, but they, the good old boys, were going to get out there and left-hand turn it. Like, that's what they were going to do. I don't know if that has changed, much the way the PGA changed its tune within the course of a day. But last
there's more
I
than
checked,
250 people at those events.
You would think.
No, just because, like, pit crews and all that, right?
You would think. But not every state so far has has made that a thing. So far, much like in Canada, we've relied on our provincial bodies to make those decisions, and they've relied on county, like Santa Clara County, public health officers. They put it in place, and I certainly don't have an indication of how the medical system works down there on that level, but wherever they're scheduled to run the race, they were going to do it last time I checked.
So what you're saying is we can watch NASCAR tomorrow.
We could.
Let's go.
There's a lot of things I could
NASCAR
watch tomorrow.
NASCAR Central, Scott.
Not happening. Not happening. Scott Rintoul, Vic Nizar, this is Canucks Central. Alex Auld will join us next. We'll get a player's perspective on this and the questions that will be raised right now, what guys are going through when they're not scheduled. And again, these are first world problems, but how do players deal with this? Find out from Aldi right after this on Canucks Central, on your home of Canucks hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Scott Rinto, Bick Nizar, keep texting your questions in, your concerns, your thoughts, your speculation of what the NHL could do, might not do. Everybody's got questions. We do too. Subway text line is 650-650. We'll bounce some of them off Alex Auld, who will join us here momentarily. Tyler Maple Ridge, another thing to think about is contract bonuses. How can some players meet those if a full season isn't played? Again, these are contractual details to be worked out, and some of those might be hard number totals. A lot of those now, I'm not going to speak for every contract because every contract's different, but a lot of them now are per game if you get past a certain threshold.
Yeah, and if you're thinking of...
Oh, a guy's got to hit 50 goals, for example.
Yeah.
Now, some that might be a hard and fast one.
Some of the standard level A
bonuses
for entry-level deals are very much points per game and assists per game.
Past a certain threshold.
Yeah, so, yes. And then if you talk about guys like Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, they've met all those already. So, again, just locally, here what happens with this team, those two guys are going to be the two big earners when it comes to bonuses.
Well, they've already maxed.
Yeah, they've already hit all of theirs.
They're good.
So you don't need to worry about that.
We good.
Or you do need to worry about that because they've already hit it.
This one comes in. I'm just curious to see if the season continues from the regular season. Do they continue from the game they were supposed to play next, say Arizona, or would they go from the game that's next based on the date, like the 20th against the Ducks? God forbid we don't play any more games this regular season. Not the worst thing, but if they do go playoffs, you only hope they go by points percentage. Jackson in Coquitlam.
So what I imagine would happen is the schedule stays intact until they have to cancel games. So we lost the Arizona game yesterday, that goes into the postponement queue of what they fix. So a game like the 20th, that stays on schedule, and they just they amend the ones that they couldn't at the end.
So here's the deal. We are 2 weeks basically away, 3 weeks I should say, from the end of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
There's no hockey in those next 3 weeks.
So that's the other thing.
Those are all getting thrown into the queue. If this happens in very short order, the most logical thought is just even up the games. Like, even up the games. So
everyone plays 78.
Whatever it is. 74, 76. Whatever that number is, get everybody caught up to the same point so we have a way. Again, that's the most logical. So now all of a sudden the schedule gets thrown into flux because some of those teams that might have been on your schedule have played more games, and mm-hmm. so you might not actually play them. But they have to come up with so many different creative solutions for all of this. They'll have time to work it out. I don't have the answer to that, Jackson. It's a fair question. We just don't have any answers. Gary Bettman doesn't have those answers right now,
frankly. The example that was used, the 20th, again, it's funny to even look at, but when you look at like the schedules, you just see postpone. I think the earliest return date, would be like the 29th, 28th, somewhere around there. So that would be your starting point.
Yeah, my phone... You know, you have alerts set on your phone.
Yeah.
Your calendar has alerts because you've got, in our business, you've got all the games programmed into your calendar. MLS, for example, all of a sudden they said season postponed, and I just get these alerts like game by game on my phone going, Vancouver versus Colorado. I know.
I get it.
Just put in MLS postponed. That'd be great. Alex Auld joins us now as he does every single Friday here on Canucks Central. Aldi, how are you doing?
Well, all things considered, I guess pretty good. I found myself sort of scouring news outlets before joining you guys, just because it's one of those things where you want to be prepared and who knows what might have broke in the last 10 to 15 minutes, right? Well, I'm kind of sitting around the house trying to get ready to join you guys, and it's just, I don't know, what a world we live in, right? It's unbelievable what is going on, and a lot of the same conversations the last couple of days after you get over the sort of the news of sports leagues canceling, postponing, or whatever it is they're doing to their seasons. After you get over that, it's a whole lot of the same thing. It's speculation and wondering and guessing. And just like the listener, I guess it was, that reached out to you guys wondering what's likely going forward. I think the biggest thing is no one knows, as you guys said. And then on top of that, leagues would be in a position where they're starting to build contingency plans. They're going to have multiple options in place, what-if scenarios, almost week by week going forward. And inevitably, most of these leagues would have a drop-dead date where they say, we're not going to go past this, because then next year gets thrown into flux. So everything is probably on the table, whether you're a government or whether you're a professional sports league and a franchise, and you're just trying to keep an open mind about it and maintain that safety first and foremost.
Aldi, as a former professional athlete, you know this as well as anybody. More so than our children these days, athletes are scheduled down to the hour, down to the minute. You know exactly where you're supposed to be, which bus you're supposed to be on, when you're eating, all of those different things. That gets thrown into flux right now. And in the short term, no big deal. When does that become a bit anxious for an athlete, that feeling where you're itching to figure out what to do next because you don't have anyone to tell you?
Well, Scotty, I thought you were going to say more so now than our children. They're spoiled, professional athletes are. But you're right. They scheduled and spoiled to a good degree in that they're everything that is sort of not about playing the game, it's taken off their plate, right? So there's no external noise. There's none of that extra things they need to take care of. And the routine is a very, very big part of that. And so what ends up happening is you end up in these situations where a short little break is nice. I mean, it's unprecedented. Obviously, it's a situation where these guys are like, they're thinking about gearing up for the stretch drive and how they need to win, you know, and how many games they have left, and their schedule watching every night and looking at the standings. All of a sudden, now it's like, okay, now what do I do? Or, you know, I don't know. I haven't heard. Do the players have access to the arena? Are they able to train? Are they expected to train on their own? And then there's all the concerns about. I just read an article about how public gyms could be one of the massive breeding grounds of bacteria and virus and all of those types of things. So it's like, where do you want these players to maintain their level of fitness? And you've got some of these players returning to Canada from the United States, and the fact that now the Prime Minister has said that everyone should self-isolate. Like, there's so many aspects that make this even more complicated from a player's point of view, from the staff, the coaching staff, the training staff. If you're a strength and conditioning coach, or if Scotty, if you're going to train for a marathon, you have an end date in sight. If you're a strength and conditioning coach for an NHL team and you're looking at building an off-season program, you know when the start of training camp is, you know when the start of the regular season is, so you build a program appropriately. It is very difficult to look at maintaining strength, maintaining condition, and not know when it's for, not having an end date, not having any fixed timelines. So that's another part of the problem here, is that you're trying to stay ready, stay in shape, stay mentally focused without knowing what it is you're staying ready for or when that would be. And that is probably one of the most difficult things. And then if you're looking at an extended period of time, how do you as a coach maintain a level of competitiveness in practice and battle and compete? But it could be weeks or a month, you know, and then it's like, how do you do the same stuff every day and keep these guys up and ready to go? It's an extremely challenging situation from that point of view.
Do you recall, I'm just trying to think of other uncertain times. Obviously, the lockout would have been one of the most uncertain times for you. What was your schedule like as you waited, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, there's been nothing like this. There's been, I guess lockouts are one thing, but every lockout I went through, I had a place to play. So even if it was a short-term situation where you were kind of in flux for a week or something, then you would go. So the 04-05, I played in Manitoba, and it was kind of, I knew that going in, even when I signed my contract in the summer, that if, you know, the season was scrapped, that's where I was going to go, and I'd play in the AHL again. So that year, really, it didn't feel different at all. And then the most recent lockout, I didn't get a contract, so, and I signed in Europe, and I left actually earlier than I would have to play in the NHL because their season started sooner, and I had made that decision that that's what I was going to do. So, you know, those times, I still had routine. I still had that regular structure, as much as you got to get used to a new city, or in the case of going to Austria, a new country, a new continent. Once you're there and settled, you're into it, and routine is very much an important factor, and because athletes are creatures of habit for sure. And then I think back to my very first NHL training camp, which everything was different because it was my first year as a pro, but that was basically the morning training camp started. I woke up and my clock radio, yes guys, 2001 clock radio in the hotel woke me up, and it was basically the news of World Trade Center bombing. And like, that was, I'm like, what is going on? And then I remember, so that was maybe there was short-term indecision about what was going to happen and how they were going to carry on with training camp and the start of the preseason and everything. And if you guys remember and think back to that time, sports was actually a situation when you think about the New York Yankees and the World Series, and you think about some of the great shows, I guess, of the patriotism in the United States, but also people coming together and almost standing in defiance against terrorism, that they were still going to go to these public events, and sports helped get people through that time in some way. And if nothing else, it was an escape. And we don't have that either. And that's something that overwhelmingly I'm seeing in my Twitter feed and across social media, is that we don't even have the escape of sports, because every time I go to sports, we're talking about stuff like this. And so it's really a unique situation in the world.
Scott and I spent a good chunk of the first bit talking about Gary Bettman and how a time like this, okay, leadership really starts to show up. You spent some time as like a player rep as far as the negotiating committee. So from a player's perspective, is this a moment where everyone's looking at the player rep for each respective team?
In a way, I mean, it's basically that's how information funnels through. But at the same time, nowadays with communication and technology, like anything that's going to be coming from the Players Association as in terms of a directive or sort of how they view things or even from the league, I mean, it pretty quickly can get into the hands of the players via email or messaging. And so, yeah, the player reps would make sure that everybody knows and is aware of what's going on. But because this is also, the player reps have this very important role, especially when you're outside of the confines of an NHL team and NHL season, because there's no communication about, for instance, negotiating and collective bargaining that's coming from the organization to the players. But since this is for the most part about, NHL league decisions and how it affects the team, there'd be a lot of communication coming down, obviously, from the organization to the players. But if there is ever anything where the league and the PA aren't in lockstep, then that's when the communication chains and that channel from the Players Association through down to the player reps to the players becomes even more important. And that's obviously something that the Players Association will be having communication quite regularly with the reps and with its executive committee, and making sure that everyone understands sort of where they're at on all this. But I don't imagine that there would be much that the Players Association doesn't agree with. The only time, obviously, is if there was something that came down to the health and safety of the employees, if the league were to say, hey, we need to go back and play now, and people didn't feel that was safe. But based on the way the league has handled this and the way that all these professional sports organizations and leagues seem to be in lockstep and how they're going to proceed, you would imagine that they're going to err on the side of caution and they won't return until it's fully safe for the players and obviously the fans.
I want to return to a point you made just a couple of minutes ago about sports being a way to unite, sports being a way to rally. And I'm not just talking about the games, Aldi. Athletes in our community have a certain platform. Look, doing this show, I have a certain platform. I feel an obligation to not only dispense news, but promote what I think are the correct ways our community can come together. And athletes have an interesting way of being able to do that as well. And this isn't me putting pressure on any member of the Canucks, any individual, but I will say that we have seen this in times in this community. One I can think of, because you go down the list of what you think about, and first it's closest to you and maybe your neighborhood or whatever. I remember Kevin Bieksa stepping up during that last lockout and saying, charities are hurting right now and we need to help them out. You know, we just had this incredible telethon the other night, and it's kind of fortunate on the timing because people were able to donate, and these are going to be tough times, and we don't think of those who often have it worse off than us, but it's a very unique opportunity athletes have because they have the platform to rally people around them, don't they?
Well, they absolutely do, and that is something where I'm sure, especially as the days go on here and sort of the players and anyone sort of in that position wraps their head around the fact that they don't have that their regular routine and also their regular responsibilities in terms of, their day-to-day and how they need to stay in shape and ready and play games and everything, then they can look at other aspects. And I'm sure that'll be something that comes to the forefront in their minds that, how else can they help? And you're absolutely right. It's important that I think people think about the greater good in a time like this. Some of the stories you're hearing about hoarding and people, buying up lots of items at a place like Costco and then price gouging and trying to sell online, like that sort of stuff is not the way to go about things. And I think you have to look at how you can help rather than how you can take from society in a time like this. And for a number of these players, I'm sure they're going to look at that, and everyone can, you can help in so many different ways, obviously, and oftentimes the platform and the ability for a message to get across en masse is something that's the most powerful way that a professional athlete can help, especially in today's modern age of social media, and you look at the followings that some of these guys have in sheer numbers.
Alex Auld of the Canucks pod and also former NHL goalie. You know, we did still have games this week, Aldi. We usually ask you about a play of the week. I'm assuming it's just going to come from that Islanders game. Do you have a moment from Thatcher Demko's week that you want to share with us?
I'm woefully unprepared, boys. But to be honest, like I thought that was, you know what, that whole 5-on-3 early on. Like
right.
I think he was. It's interesting because we were pretty critical of him early on in his tenure as sort of, you know, having to take over from Jacob Markstrom and some of the struggles. We talked a lot about it. Really fascinating to me the way he was able to sort of regain his focus. They put Louis Domingue in the one game, and then Thatcher Demko came back and for my money has played really well and actually been able to respond well to some tough situations. You think about the one goal that bounced in off his ear, and it was like right at the start of the game in one of the games, and you're just like, oh man, like this could go sideways in a hurry. Some early goals against that to me shows some mental fortitude and some toughness and ability to be resilient in those moments, and that is really important because you need to be able to really forget about what happened. It's not what just happened. It's how you respond. And that is something where the more comfortable you get playing at a certain level, and let's remember, I mean, Thatcher Demko hasn't played a lot of career games in the National Hockey League. The more comfortable you get playing at a certain level, the easier it is to just sort of park something and put it behind you and move forward. And games like that against the Islanders, and we think back, I mean, if, you know, last year, the greatest game in the Canucks' last 5 years outside of Sedin retirement is that crazy Colorado overtime game. Yet, if the Canucks would have lost, like, you don't even think about who was in goal for the Canucks that night, but the goalie gave up 6 goals. And if they would have lost, he probably would have got raked through the coals, you know? And so it's like, can you make the next save? Can you do that in the moment? And as much as Demko gave up 4 goals, he also set a career high in saves and was fantastic and has been lights out in the shootouts. So he's been able to find a way to really recover from a tough early stretch as the Canucks starting goaltender. And I like that long-term for his development. And if it's in the near future, if he's required to carry the load again, if and when the Canucks get back to play, who knows? But if nothing else, it helps show that he can handle that moment. And I think he did a pretty good job in it.
One thing we did want to ask you, or I want to ask you, because you know, one thing I've learned so much is how controlled a player like Jacob Markstrom is now. And, you know, Thatcher Demko made all the saves that he needed to make, obviously, on Tuesday. But at times it did feel like there was such a reliance on his own athleticism to make the saves rather than what we've seen from Jacob Markstrom, where it's subtle maneuvers and the puck just gets sucked into his chest. Is that a fair thing to say of Demko's game on Tuesday?
Yeah, I do think he's making strides in terms of his efficiency. But it's one of those things where it takes so long to build that consistency and movement, and it's all through repetition, and you have to do the right reps over and over again so that you have the balance of being able to know what it is you're supposed to be doing, having you know, the video tools and the coach and the self-awareness to realize when you're doing it correctly and when you're not, so it's pointed out, and then just sort of that, I guess, athletic knowledge or the general athleticism of being able to apply and understand where you are in space and whether it's right or not and kind of feel that in the moment. And that is the true gift in all of this that really good athletes possess and people who aren't good athletes don't. It's that natural ability to understand and kind of by feel, by looking and saying, yes, that's right, that's wrong, and how you then tweak and change going forward. So, you know, when you look at Jacob Markstrom, he took years to slowly progress. And it almost seemed like overnight last year, like the calendar flipped into the new year or in December and he just was lights out. But it's almost like that's when the realization hit him, okay, this is now something I can trust and something I can throw out there every night. And it's going to give me success more often than not. And Demko is probably a little bit further ahead in that just because of the fact he's had more structure applied to his game earlier in his career and earlier in terms of age. So I would say that, you know, we're probably closer to seeing Thatcher Demko in terms of his age range of hitting that sort of peak place than Markstrom would have, because Markstrom had so much turmoil early on in his career having to deal with, you know, playing behind the Florida Panthers defense, multiple goalie coaches, the trade to Vancouver. I mean, there was three goalie coaches through his time with the Canucks plus a minor league. So a lot of change. And so for Demko, I do think he's on the right track, but you're right. He has to slowly chip away at that.
Aldi, great stuff as always. We enjoy these conversations. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to be talking about at this time next week. Hopefully we can keep doing this, pal. Keep you and yours healthy.
Yeah, you too. And I joined Reach Deep yesterday and I came up with a term and I just Netflix and self-isolate and just relax. You know, I don't know. We'll catch up on Netflix next week.
Glad you said isolate, not flagellate, but that's a different conversation. What? Thanks, Aldi.
Awkward. All right. Take care.
Bye. Well, if he was playing on the whole Netflix and chill, I didn't know where he was going with that.
I follow.
You introduced the term self, and I just have no idea what Aldi's going to do on any given day. Sometimes we like to make you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
That's my attempt at it right there. Bic, you guys have the program coming up. I know what the subject matter is. Who are the subjects?
Well, Ian McIntyre will join us. He just wrote a piece for Sportsnet.ca, just talking about like what this all means. And it's tough, and it can be terrifying, but how do we all get through this together? I would recommend checking that out, but we'll talk to him at 4:35.
Want to throw this out there one more time, and I've tweeted it, and I know you feel the same way, Bic. A lot of you feel like you know us, even though we don't know each other that well.
Mm-hmm.
We're here for your conversations.
Absolutely.
And that means beyond the hours of this show. Some people need to talk during stressful times. Some people need to reach out. You can find me on Twitter, at Scott Rintoul.
At Bic650. And, okay, to that point, I'm glad you really mentioned this. I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I'm here to have a conversation. Open DMs at Bic650. More than welcome to reach out anytime.
Absolutely. Today, tomorrow, any course of the weekend, during the show, whatever that happens to be, we will do our best.
And it doesn't even need to be about this, right?
Nope.
Down the road,
sports,
whatever
life,
it is.
Issues, you
just
name
talk.
It.
Just talk. We're always here to talk.
Might not have all the answers. We'll try to point you in the right direction if we don't. Dan Riccio, Adam Forsyth, they are coming up next with Reach Deep on your home of Vancouver Hockey, Sportsnet 650.